This morning we have two scriptures, the first from Isaiah chapter 60, verses 1 through 6. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples, but the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look around. They all gather together, they come to you. Your sons shall come from far away, and your daughters shall be carried on their nurses' arms. Then you shall see and be radiant, your heart shall thrill and rejoice, because the abundance of the sea shall be brought to you, the wealth of the nations shall come to you. A multitude of camels shall cover you, the young camels of Midian and Ephah. Those from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and frankincense and shall proclaim the praise of the Lord. Then from Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there, ahead of them, went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chest, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Be seated. I love the story, and I'm glad that Christmas isn't quite over, that even in Epiphany, some of this story that we love so much in Christmas bleeds over into what is now the first Sunday in Epiphany. Epiphany means manifestation or revelation. What now has been manifested? What has God revealed to us of this person that came into the world that was born of Mary? I love this time of year, and doing something during Advent that I usually do. A number of years ago, I ran across a Christmas musical by Graham Kendrick. He's the guy that wrote, among other things, Shine, Jesus, Shine, if you're familiar with that. But he wrote this wonderful Christmas musical that lends itself to the guitar. And so what I do now, since about the only person that I entertain or play my guitar to now is myself, I run down into the lower part of the house, pull out my guitar, and see how much of this I can sing and remember. And the part of that musical that deals with the wise men is called Seekers and Dreamers. Stars in our eyes, we traveled mountains of stone. Such wild hope rises inside. Day after day and moonlit night after night, not knowing where this star will lead, where it will lead. You come to the chorus and it says, "We're the seekers, the dreamers, mystical travelers, believers, risking it all on a star, hoping there's somebody there, wanting to give him our treasures, lay at his feet the most precious gifts our hearts can bring. Oh, how we long to be there." Somebody has said that the wise men are the seekers and dreamers of the world of that time. They were the intellectuals. They were astrologers. They were wise men indeed. They were intellectuals. And they went about their search for truth in a little different way from some of the other characters in the Christmas story. Mark Trotter talked about how there's two kinds of people in this world when it comes to the faith journey. Some of us are shepherds, and some of us are wise men. Shepherds are those that have a fairly short journey to Bethlehem and a fairly easy journey to Bethlehem. They were there in the fields. It was revealed that there was a child in Bethlehem. They left their flock. They were able to get over, see the baby, marry Joseph, and then come back to their flock still in place before the night was over and nobody even knew that they were gone. Shepherds are kind of heart people. They just trust. They don't think about a lot of things because they weren't given the chance to learn how to do a lot of intellectual things, but they go and they trust. If you ask them why they believe why they're here, they say, well, it just seems like the right thing to do. And many of us are shepherds. We grew up in homes where the story of Jesus Christ, everything from the beginning to the end, was told to us, not only in our homes, but in church. We may have gone through a confirmation class where we were baptized and confirmed, or we may have gone through adolescence with wonderful youth directors and ministers and Sunday school teachers and others. And whatever questioning and searching that we did wasn't too far off. Wise men represent those that come at it from a very different place. It's a long, long journey, and it's a hard journey. You sacrifice and you leave something very important behind. It takes sometimes a long, long time, many, many years maybe even in your journey. And you're the kind that thinks about the two sides of something or the different alternatives, or you're the one that thinks about starting maybe with this worldview and seeing if you can't come to the truth this way, or are looking at it from another perspective and coming there, because many of those in our world now, when they start asking about the meaning of life, they start at very different places. And the wise men kind of represent them. I know that when I look at this, I was just looking at the hymn that we just sang. Some of the things that I've heard about the wise men are, is that this one was now named Melchior. This is Balthazar, and this is Casper. One is young, one is medium age, one is old. They come from different races. They come from all over the world. This one comes from, some place in the east. This from another country. This from another country. And I've enjoyed all of those stories over the years. And in Jewish literature, those kinds of things are called midrash. Another way that you could talk about that is the legends that have emerged from the story itself. The story itself, Matthew says, has two facts that we know. One is that they were astrologers. Magi, that word magi actually is sort of a root word for magician, but we know that they were astrologers, and we know that they were from the east. Those two facts. And everything else is a way of kind of enhancing that story. But some of the things that Matthew knows that he wanted us to know is that they were not representing just a small group of people on this earth, a select group of people, an exclusive group of people. They were actually representing the entire world. These were Gentiles, not Jews. And they did not have any of the Jewish history. They did not have the stories that we have in the Old Testament as a beginning point. They had other points of references as a beginning point. But they had this longing and they had this desire to know the ultimate truth in life, the reason for life, the meaning in life, and how it can be discovered or revealed to us. And that was one of the important things that Matthew wanted us to know. And when they did come and finally find this answer to the questions that they were asking, they knelt down and they gave him the gifts of gold and frankincense, which is mentioned in the Isaiah passage that we read this morning. It's one reason that Matthew remembered the gold and frankincense, because it was a part of the prophecy. Myrrh was another part of that, which was a drug, really, in the day. Jesus was offered that drug along with vinegar while he hung on the cross, because it was a painkiller. And then the myrrh was also what you prepared a dead body with for burial. So Nicodemus brought myrrh as they prepared Jesus' dead body for burial. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh cover the gifts. Also in Isaiah, they were talking about the multitude of camels that were coming from afar in order to be there. So Matthew is really picking up on something really significant and saying what has happened here is for the whole world. Another thing that he was saying in that is that no matter where you start, whether it is from the heart or from the head like the wise men, God is always ready to meet you right where you are. You do not have to become a shepherd in order to come to Christ. And the only way to Christ is not the route of the wise men either. All of us have a different journey. We're all on a different path. But the good thing about God is that He meets us right where we are in order to take us to the truth that He has revealed to us by coming to us in Jesus Christ, the whole Christ event. And blessed are those who stay with that journey, even taking it while they still have questions, even though all of their questions aren't answered. Matthew wants us to understand that even the broadest perspective that is out there in this world is one that God has satisfied by coming to us in Jesus Christ. And the other, of course, is that this is a fulfillment of the prophecy that was in Isaiah. That which Isaiah had aimed specifically at the Jews, because they had been captive in Babylon, and now they had been released from their bondage and had been told that they are free now to go back to Jerusalem. In other words, you are free to get up and get going. Your whole life is before you now. You are no longer bound. You can go and you can seek and you can dream and you can climb, and you can go with God to the life that God has waiting for you at this point. Don't stay in your bondage anymore. And that's true for all of us, whether that bondage is drugs and alcohol, whether that bondage is an attitude that we have that keep us from even seeing the life that God wants us to live, or whether it is an attitude toward others that destroys relationships instead of builds relationships in love. There's a lot of different ways in which we all are in some kind of bondage at some point. Well, the word is get up and get going. Go home. God is going before you, and God is awaiting you for a whole new life. And I think that is really what I think about every time I come to the beginning of a new year. Some time ago, there was a society called the Millennium Society, and it was preparing for, the new millennium, kind of like we look forward to the new year each year. And it really started from a group of college students who said, everywhere we go, we hear people saying that our young people today are looking at the future with fear. But, they're saying, I don't know any of us that are looking at the future with fear. Those that I know are looking at the future with a great deal of optimism and hope and promise. And so they started this society just to make that point. This is our perspective on our future. And they started recognizing people, kind of the Nobel Prize sort of folks and the Profiles in Courage sort of people that were on their list, that were just examples of human achievement and people that inspired them to want to get up and get going, to move into that future. And I discovered that I'm a part of the Millennial Society just by recognizing that I'm a part of the church. When the church looked at the fact that Jesus Christ had come, they actually divided history there. They said, this is what history looked like before Christ, but now that he has come, this is what our life looks like. This is the promise of our life. And they divided it on his birth, December the 25th, which of course is the winter solstice. But they said, everything is different now. Things can be very, very different. There is a power for transformation. There is a courage in the midst of the fears and the anxieties that we have that help us to get up and go. And when we're defeated, when we're knocked down, there is a God there. There is a presence and a power that wants to pick us up and to put us back on the road and to get us going. And at the same time that he is giving us the courage to go forward, he's giving us a peace of knowing that if we follow him, that when we come to the day of our rest, we can do it with total peace and confidence that what God has begun here, God is certainly going to be to finish. He gets the last word, and you and I are all a part of what God still plans to finish. But we're called to enjoy the journey and to stay on the journey that Christ has placed us on.